This article is brought to you by the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. How to stop feeling guilty for labelling someone's behaviour as a toxic trait. Name what you see clearly, without shame or second-guessing yourself. In short, after reading this, you will be able to name harmful behaviour clearly and confidently, without drowning in guilt or second-guessing what you saw. Separate the behaviour from the person before you name anything. Use specific, observable language to describe what happened. Trust your clear-eyed observations as an act of honesty, not cruelty. Definition: toxic trait guilt is the discomfort that follows when you recognise and name a harmful behavioural pattern in someone close to you. It is the feeling that labelling what you saw makes you judgmental, disloyal, or unkind, even when your observation is accurate and fair. You finally put a name to it. Maybe it was the way she consistently took credit for your ideas in meetings. Maybe it was the way he made you feel small every time you voiced an opinion. You recognised the pattern, you named it to yourself, and then something strange happened. You felt terrible about it. That feeling, that specific toxic trait guilt, is what keeps good people silent. It is not weakness. It is the result of a deeply human confusion between naming a behaviour and condemning a person. Most of us were raised to believe that judging others is wrong, and somewhere along the way we conflated honest observation with cruelty. The guilt also feeds on uncertainty. You wonder if you're being too sensitive, too rigid, or too quick to label. You talk yourself out of what you clearly saw, and so the harmful behaviour continues, and you carry both the harm and the guilt of having noticed it. In this guide, you will get a clear, practical process for recognising and naming toxic traits without shame, self-doubt, or unnecessary cruelty. Understanding what constitutes a difficult person in the first place can help you build the foundation of clarity this work requires. Why toxic trait guilt is harder to shake than it looks. Knowing that something is harmful and being able to name it out loud without flinching are two very different things. Most people can identify destructive patterns when they see them. Far fewer can hold that observation steady without collapsing into self-doubt. Here is why this is genuinely difficult. Empathy works against you here. When you care about someone, your instinct is to find the most generous explanation for their behaviour. That instinct is good and necessary in most situations. But it becomes a trap when the pattern is consistent and the harm is real. Naming a trait feels like a verdict. Most people experience labelling as a permanent, global judgment of a person's worth. It feels like you are reducing someone to a single word. That discomfort makes you pull back from honest observation. You fear being wrong. What if you misread the situation? What if there is context you do not know? This reasonable caution becomes unreasonable when it prevents you from trusting clear, repeated evidence. You have been taught that labelling is unkind. Many of us carry the message that putting a name to someone's behaviour is gossip, character assassination, or arrogance. That message was meant to cultivate humility. In practice, it silences important truths. The other person may have made you doubt yourself. Some toxic traits, particularly dismissiveness and emotional manipulation, are specifically designed to make you question your own perceptions. If someone has consistently told you that you are too sensitive, your doubt is not accidental. There is no clean script for this. Nobody teaches you how to say, clearly and calmly, that a pattern of behaviour is causing harm. Without a method, the moment passes and the guilt fills the space. The goal is not to eliminate these difficulties. It is to build a system that works in spite of them. The foundation. What you need before you start. Before you begin, there are three things that need to be clear. Skipping these will make every step harder than it needs to be. Number one, the behaviour, not the person. You are naming what someone does, not what someone is. This distinction is not just a kindness to them. It is accuracy. A person who manipulates in certain situations is not the same thing as a manipulative person. Keeping this distinction clear will protect both your honesty and your fairness. Before you name anything, practice stating it in behavioural terms. She interrupted me every time I spoke in that meeting rather than she is a narcissist. Number two, you own clarity first. Before you can name a toxic trait to anyone else, you need to be clear about it yourself. That means writing it down. Putting the pattern into plain words on paper forces you to test it. Vague discomfort does not become a toxic trait. Specific, repeated, harmful behaviour does. If you can't write it clearly, you are not ready to speak it. Number three, you write to your own observations. You do not need permission to notice what you have noticed. You do not need a psychologist's qualification to recognize that a pattern of behavior is causing harm. Your direct experience of someone's behavior is valid evidence. Respecting your own observations is not arrogance. It is the basic foundation of honest communication. Get these right first. The steps that follow will not work without them. Step 1. Write the pattern down in plain language. This step makes the invisible visible, and it is the single most important thing you can do before you say a word to anyone. Toxic trait guilt thrives in vagueness. When the pattern stays in your head, it swirls. It mixes with emotion, with history, with every generous interpretation you can find. Writing it down forces it into the open, where you can actually look at it clearly and steadily. Sit down with a notebook or a blank screen. Write what you observed, not what you concluded. Write where it happened, who was present, and what the effect was. Do not editorialize yet. Just describe. Write at least 3 specific incidents, not impressions or feelings, but events. For each incident, write what happened, where it happened, who was affected. Note whether the pattern repeated itself across different situations or only in one context. Write what you felt after each incident, and whether that feeling matched what was described back to you by the other person. Read what you wrote as if a trusted friend had handed it to you. Ask yourself what you would tell that friend. Example. You write, "In Tuesday's meeting, Kieran spoke over me 3 times when I was presenting the quarterly results. Last month he did the same in the project review." 2 colleagues have mentioned noticing this pattern. "After both meetings I felt invisible and I second-guessed my own contribution, even though my numbers were solid." Reading that back, you are no longer dealing with a feeling. You are dealing with evidence. That shift is the foundation of everything that follows. Step 2. Separate the behavior from your judgment of the person. Once you have the pattern written down, your next job is to hold it at arm's length and name it as accurately as you can, without letting your frustration or your loyalty distort the picture. This step requires real discipline. You are not trying to be cold. You are trying to be precise. Precision protects the other person from unfair generalizations and protects you from the guilt of feeling like you have condemned someone. There is a difference between Marcus as a manipulator and Marcus consistently minimizes other people's concerns when he feels his authority is being questioned. The second statement is harder to say but far more honest, and it gives everyone, including Marcus, something to work with. Replace global character labels with specific behavioral descriptions. Ask yourself, what exactly does this person do, in what situations, and what is the consistent effect? Check whether the behavior is context-specific or whether it appears across different relationships and settings. Ask whether the behavior serves the person's interests at a cost to others. This is often the clearest marker of a genuinely toxic trait. Notice whether the person ever acknowledges or takes responsibility for the impact of their behavior. After this step, you will have something sharper and more honest than a label. You will have a clear picture of a pattern. That is what you carry forward. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling book Say It Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at emonblickthorne.com. Now, back to the article. Step 3. Name it to yourself before you name it to anyone else. This step sounds simple. It is not. Saying something out loud, even in private, makes it real in a way that writing does not. And making it real is precisely what triggers the guilt. Sit alone somewhere quiet. Say out loud what you have observed. Use the specific language you wrote down. Do not soften it beyond recognition, but do not dramatize it either. Just say what is true. The pattern I am seeing in Sarah's behavior is that she consistently undermines other people's contributions in group settings while taking credit for shared work. This has happened 4 times in the past 2 months. It has affected my ability to trust her and to speak openly in team meetings. Say it out loud at least once before you attempt to say it to another person. Notice where the guilt rises. Is it when you name the pattern, or when you hear yourself say it aloud? Do not rush to soften the statement the moment you feel discomfort. Sit with the discomfort for a few seconds and let it pass. After saying it, ask yourself, is this true? Is it fair to the evidence I have? If yes, the guilt is not a signal that you are wrong. It is a signal that honesty is hard. Example, a man I worked with for years told me he had spent 6 months unable to name his manager's behavior, even to himself. The moment he said, out loud in an empty room, she takes credit for my work, and it is not accidental, the guilt flooded in. But so did clarity. He told me afterward. I realized the guilt was about loyalty, not about being wrong. That distinction gave him solid ground to stand on. Naming it to yourself is the step that converts the guilt from a stop sign into a feeling you can walk alongside. Step 4. Anticipate the pushback, especially from yourself. Once you have named the toxic trait clearly, your mind will begin to argue. This is not weakness. It is the mind doing what minds do, looking for alternatives, testing for error, protecting relationships you value. The problem is when this natural process becomes a method of erasure. Healthy skepticism asks, have I got this right? Toxic trait guilt asks, who am I to say this? These are very different questions. One refines your understanding, the other dismantles it entirely. You need to prepare for the specific objections your mind will raise, because they will come. Write down your 3 strongest arguments for why you might be wrong about the pattern. For each argument, test it against the specific evidence you gathered in step 1. Distinguish between genuine doubt based on evidence and guilt-based doubt rooted in loyalty or fear. Prepare for the possibility that the other person will deny the pattern or reframe it. Decide in advance whether their denial will change your assessment or simply be information. Remind yourself that you are not required to have the other person's agreement in order to have seen what you saw. You are building resilience here. This work prepares you to hold your position under pressure, not out of stubbornness, but because you have tested it honestly and it stands up. If you find it helpful, reading about how to address passive-aggressive behavior that silently eroding team synergy can show you what this kind of clarity looks like in practice. Step 5. Decide whether to name it to the other person. This is where everything you have built gets applied. The question is not whether you are allowed to name the toxic trait to the person directly. The question is whether doing so serves a clear and honest purpose. Not every toxic trait needs to be named to its source. Sometimes naming it to a trusted colleague, a manager, or simply to yourself is the right and sufficient action. Other times, direct conversation is necessary, and this step helps you decide which situation you are in. Ask yourself 3 things. What do I want to change? Is that change possible if I speak directly? Am I prepared for the response? Identify the specific outcome you want from naming the behavior. Change in behavior, a boundary, a conversation, or simply your own clarity. Assess whether the other person has the capacity to hear this. Some people, when confronted with a toxic trait, will escalate rather than reflect. This is worth knowing in advance. Decide what you will say if they deny it, minimize it, or turn it back on you. Choose the setting carefully. Private conversations are almost always more productive than public ones when the subject is someone's behavioral pattern. Prepare a script in plain behavioral language before you walk into the room. Example script. I want to talk about something I have noticed in our last few meetings. When I present my ideas, I have found that you often speak over me before I have finished, and then the conversation moves on without returning to my point. That has happened 3 times in the past month. I would like us to find a way to change that. This is specific, calm, and fair. It gives the other person something real to respond to. For more on building this kind of conversation from the ground up, how to start a difficult conversation that's blocking your team's synergy is worth reading before you go in. Adapting this process for high-conflict environments. In most workplaces, naming a toxic trait is uncomfortable, but manageable. In high-conflict environments, where defensiveness runs high and power dynamics are pronounced, the same process requires careful adjustment. Document everything before you speak. In high-conflict settings, your observations are more likely to be challenged aggressively, and your clarity is more likely to be undermined. Keep a written record of incidents, dates, and witnesses before you name anything. This is not paranoia. It is preparation. Raise the concern through the right channel first. In some environments, naming a toxic trait directly to the person who holds power over you carries significant risk. Know your organization's structure. Consider whether a conversation with HR, a trusted senior colleague, or a formal feedback process is a safer and more effective route than a one-on-one confrontation. Understanding what psychological safety means in your team will help you assess whether your environment supports honest conversations at all. Name the impact, not the intent. In high-conflict environments, naming someone's intent you did this on purpose will almost always trigger denial and escalation. Naming the impact this behavior has affected my ability to contribute effectively is harder to argue with and keeps the conversation on factual ground. Bring a witness or an advocate. In formal settings, you have the right to have someone present. In informal settings, telling a trusted colleague what you're planning to do gives you both accountability and support. You do not have to do this alone. Prepare for retaliation by having a plan. This is not pessimism. If you're naming a toxic trait in a power imbalanced environment, know in advance who you would go to if the conversation is punished rather than heard. For specific language, when you get to that stage, scripts for addressing team members who are undermining group synergy provides frameworks you can adapt. The core process holds steady even here. Only the execution changes. Common mistakes to avoid when naming toxic traits. Let me tell you about the mistakes I see most often. I have made most of them myself. The mistake: naming the trait to everyone except the person who needs to hear it. Why it happens: venting feels safer than confronting, and it temporarily relieves the pressure. What to do instead? Use your trusted circle for clarity and support, but set a deadline for when you will address the behavior directly or take formal action. Venting without resolution is not a strategy. The mistake: waiting until you are angry to say anything. Why it happens: accumulated frustration finally overrides the guilt, and the words come out in a rush. What to do instead? Name the pattern early, when you are calm and clear. The earlier you name it, the more precise and fair you will be. Anger is information, not a delivery method. The mistake: softening the language until the point disappears entirely. Why it happens: guilt makes you over-apologize for having noticed something real. What to do instead? Be kind in your tone and specific in your language. Kindness does not require you to be vague. I have noticed a pattern is both gentle and clear. The mistake: accepting the other person's denial as proof that you are wrong. Why it happens: if they say it did not happen, or that you misunderstood, the guilt rushes back in and you capitulate. What to do instead? Acknowledge their perspective without abandoning your own. I hear that you see it differently. I'm sharing what I observed and how it affected me. That is a complete and honest response. For more on how to give this kind of feedback without creating unnecessary tension, how to give constructive feedback without causing tension is directly relevant. The mistake: using the label as a weapon rather than a description. Why it happens: frustration builds over time and the language becomes global and aggressive. What to do instead? Return to behavioral language every time. The label is a tool for clarity, not a verdict. The moment it becomes a weapon, it stops serving anyone. These are not character flaws. They are gaps in the system. Fix the system. Your practical checklist for naming a toxic trait without guilt. Use this checklist before you begin, and after each cycle, I have written down at least 3 specific incidents, not just impressions. I have described each incident in behavioral terms, not global character labels. I have separated the harmful behavior from my judgment of the person's overall character. I have said the pattern out loud to myself at least once before approaching anyone else. I have tested my strongest doubts against the actual evidence I gathered. I have decided what specific outcome I want from naming this behavior. I have assessed whether the other person can hear this conversation productively. I have prepared a plain language script before a direct conversation. I have chosen an appropriate setting and, if needed, an appropriate channel. I have a plan for how I will respond if the other person denies or minimizes the pattern. I have identified one person I trust who knows what I am doing and why. I have reminded myself that naming what I observed is an act of honesty, not an act of cruelty. If you cannot check most of these, that is your starting point. Summary and next steps. You now have a process for naming a toxic trait clearly and fairly, without the guilt collapsing the conversation before it begins. That is not a small thing. Most people spend years either silent or explosive because they lack the structure to hold both honesty and compassion at the same time. Writing the pattern down converts vague discomfort into specific, testable evidence. Separating behavior from character protects both your fairness and your clarity. Naming the pattern to yourself first builds the strength to say it to others. Anticipating your own pushback prevents guilt from erasing what you clearly saw. Choosing whether and how to speak directly is a decision, not a moral obligation with only one answer. In high conflict environments, channel and preparation matter as much as courage. Toxic trait guilt is real, but it is not evidence that you are wrong. Your next step is to return to the evidence you gathered and decide where you are in this process. If you are not yet ready to speak directly, that is fine. Use the time to prepare. If you are ready, use the script framework in step 5 and read how to give feedback that strengthens team synergy instead of breaking it before you go in. If the conversation has already happened and did not go the way you hoped, why avoiding difficult conversations is the hidden enemy of team synergy will help you understand what is at stake if you let the pattern continue unchallenged. Naming toxic trait guilt for what it is, the discomfort of honesty rather than the signal of wrongdoing, is the first and most important act of courage this whole process requires. Frequently asked questions. What is toxic trait guilt, and why does it happen? Toxic trait guilt is the discomfort you feel after recognizing and naming harmful behavior in someone you care about. It happens because naming a pattern feels like a judgment of the whole person. Most people confuse labeling a behavior with attacking someone's character, which triggers empathy and self-doubt. Is it wrong to label someone as having a toxic trait? No. Labeling a specific behavior as harmful is not the same as condemning a person. You are naming what you observed, not issuing a verdict on someone's worth. The discomfort you feel is normal, but it does not mean you are being unkind or unfair to the other person. How do you stop feeling guilty for recognizing toxic traits in others? You stop toxic trait guilt by separating behavior from identity. The person is not the pattern. Remind yourself that naming something harmful is an act of honesty, not cruelty. Practice stating what you saw in plain, specific language before adding any interpretation or emotional weight to it. Can toxic trait guilt make you ignore harmful behavior? Yes, absolutely. Toxic trait guilt is one of the most common reasons people minimize or excuse patterns they have already recognized. When guilt overrides your clear-eyed observation, harmful behavior continues unchecked. Naming the pattern is the first step to addressing it, and guilt delays that step significantly. How do you label a toxic trait without being cruel or unfair? Focus on the behavior and its impact, not the person's character. Say what you observed, when it happened, and how it affected you or others. Avoid global statements like always or never. This keeps the conversation grounded in fact and gives the other person something specific to respond to. What is the difference between a toxic trait and a personality flaw? A personality flaw is a characteristic that causes mild friction or inconvenience. A toxic trait is a repeated behavioral pattern that causes consistent harm to others, erodes trust, or damages someone's sense of safety and respect. The key distinction is the presence of real, recurring harm, not just personal annoyance. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblackthorne.com to get your copy.